The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yitzchak Grossman, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Vav. The Gemara on Daf Lamed Vav and Beis says, Tanya, Ein Mashivin B'Sanhedrin, Zakein, Mishris, and Mishain Labanim. We do not appoint to the Sanhedrin an elderly person, someone who is sterile, someone who has no children. Behud the Mosif, Afachdari, a cruel person. What is wrong with the first three? What's wrong with the Zakein and Sris from Yishein Labanim? Rashi explains, Zakein sheshachach kvar tzar gidl banim beino rachmani. A Zakein has forgotten the pain, the difficulty involved in raising children, and he is therefore not compassionate. V'chein Sris, who has no children, cannot be compassionate, and certainly, I guess, a cruel person. Now, this sounds like a nice idea, that on the Sanhedrin, we would like to have people who are merciful, who are not cruel. But if you think about it, this is really a tremendous chiddush. We're used to thinking that din is din. Is rachmanis really, really, really a part of a din? We have a klal, we have a principle, ein merachem b'din. The phrase ein merachem b'din actually appears in Ksuvos, in a Mishnah, and Daf Pedalim and Aleph. The phrase doesn't actually mean all that much over there. It's talking about a specific halacha, how to decide a certain rule, machlokes tanaim, but in general, and in the literature elsewhere, we often find the principle, ein merachem b'din. The Torah itself actually tells us twice, no less than twice, that we may not have mercy on a poor person when sitting in din. It says, lo sedar pnei dol, and it says, v'dol lo sedar b'riva. Twice we are told that we cannot have rachmanis on somebody simply because he's poor. The basic tension here between rachmanis and din, I noticed this past year while davening on the Yom Naran, this comes up in Rosh Hashanah, in the piyut, melech mishpat yamid aretz. We say that in Shacharis, Chazaras Hashatz of Shacharis, right before Kedusha. There's a long piyut and discusses din at great length. So we have a couple of stanzas that read as follows. We write, the Paitan writes, Ula yechanin b'shas ha-din. Hopefully, perhaps, God will have mercy on us b'shas ha-din. Ki ain rachman b'din. There is no rachman b'din. V'lo yisapanim b'din. And God does not play favorites during din. And a few lines later, we write, Akol be'emes, ba'akol be'din. Everything is true. Everything is din. Midas ha-racham, midas ha-din. We can't seem to quite make up our mind. Is there racham be'din or is there no racham be'din? First we say, Ula yechonen. Perhaps he will compassionate us. Yein racham be'din. There is no racham be'din. Then we write, Akol be'din, midas ha-racham, midas ha-din. So what's the idea? Is racham a component of din, or is din supposed to be pure justice and does not involve any racham? In the secular world, in the American jurisprudential system, there are some interesting anecdotes, interesting episodes highlighting this clash. For one thing, most recently, when President Obama discussed the criteria he had for judicial nominees, he said that he would like a justice with empathy. And many traditionalists, constitutionally minded people were quite upset. They felt that a judge should not have empathy. A judge should decide according to the law. Senator John Kyle, in a speech before the Federalist Society, actually threatened to filibuster judges who were going to decide cases based on empathy. Even more interesting, going back a few years, during the confirmation hearings of the man who is now Chief Justice John Roberts, he made this point quite eloquently. He said as follows during the hearings. He said, somebody asked me, are you going to be on the side of the little guy? So he said, you obviously want to give an immediate answer, but obviously meaning yes. But as you reflect on it, he said, if the Constitution says the little guy should win, the little guy's going to win. If the Constitution says the big guy should win, the big guy's going to win. My obligation is to the Constitution. That's the oath. The oath that a judge takes is not, I'll look after a particular interest, I'll be on the side of a particular interest. The oath is to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the United States, and that's what I would do. He goes on for a while, and then he summarizes again. He writes, he says, carved above the doors to the Supreme Court, equal justice under the law. The judicial oath talks about doing justice without regard to persons, to rich and to poor, and that's critically important. And he ends by saying, sometimes the Constitution is on that person's side, not on the side of the corporation with the fancy printed brief, but the judge's obligation is to appreciate that the rule of law requires that both of those be treated equally under the law. When I first saw this, my reaction was, you know, thank the Lord that this man is now the Chief Justice. But it's not so simple. We see here, we're going to see more sources, that there is some room for rachman in din. Also very interesting, going back a few decades before that, We have a very famous anecdote involving Judge Learned Hand and Justice Holmes, the great Justice Holmes. Learned Hand says that he was once talking to Justice Holmes, and he told him, "Well, sir, goodbye, do justice." So Holmes turned around and said to him, come here. He replied, "That is not my job. My job is to play the game according to the rules." Holmes is also quoted as saying, both these stories are apocryphal, but they apparently are typical for the man. Holmes is quoted as saying, "I have said to my brethren many times that I hate justice, which means that I know if a man begins to talk about that, for one reason or another, he is shirking thinking in legal terms. A judge is supposed to apply the law, not apply vague notions of justice." But getting back to the Torah, so what is the story here? Is a Dayan supposed to have racham? Is he supposed to, or is he supposed to simply apply the din? So I actually saw there's a remarkable essay, a very remarkable comment by Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin in his biographical sketch of Yitzchok Chanan Spector in his Ishim Beshitas. He writes that Yitzchok Chanan was a great Baal Chesed. He was tremendously involved in helping out the city, the community. And he writes, even in his Pesukei Halacha, he says, he's not so sure, he says, whether Chesed and Rachmim is really relevant in Pesukei Halacha. But he goes on to say that it seems like it is, he says. He says that Yitzchok Chanan was a great Mekel. It's true, he says. Of course, he wasn't just Mekel arbitrarily. He was Mekel with Masa Matan Shalacha. But he was a tremendous Mekel. And then he says, Rav Zevin, after all, was a Chassidish. Then Rav Zevin says that the Mekubalim tell us that Beis Shammai, the roots of their souls were in Gvura. And Beis Hillel, the roots of their souls were in Chesed. And that's why, I guess, Beis Hillel tended to be Mekel and Beis Shammai tended to be Machmer. He says, it seems that the root of the soul of Yitzchok Chanan came from Chesed. It's really a remarkable thing, and this is the kind of thing we think that maybe the conservative rabbis say that Tzach is decided based on feelings, but Rav Zevin felt this. Rav Zevin felt that Beis Hillel, according to the Mekubalim, and Rav Yitzchok Chanan himself, their kula, their lenient tendencies actually came from an overall personal characteristic and was not simply a purely neutral application of the halacha. Rav Zevin gives an example. He says, in one volume of the Ein Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchok Chanan's responsa, there are more than 70 Aguna Tshuvas, and in only one is he actually Machmer. As my father always points out, Rav Yitzchok Chanan was not getting the easy ones. The easy ones had already been solved before they got to him. He was getting the tough ones, and still he managed to make it in the overwhelming majority of cases. And Rav Zevin says that this is an example of his Midas HaChesed, of his Sharash HaNeshama, if you prefer to think in Kabbalistic terms, being rooted in Chesed. Similarly, the Rishon Lezion of Eretz Yisrael many years ago, Rav Ben Tzion Meir Chai Yizil, along with his Talmud, Rav Chaim David Halevi, and their follower, Rav Mark Angel, there's apparently a strong thread of this idea that runs through all their work, that Chesed, that Avas Yisrael, is actually a major factor influencing their halachic decision-making. There's Rav Chaim David Halevi has apparently discussed this at length in his written works. There's explaining the sheets of his Rebbe, Rav Uziel. There's a section that's been translated into English by Rabbi Angel, published in Tradition. The essay is titled, "The Love of Israel as a Factor in Halachic Decision-Making in the Works of Rabbi Ben Zion Uziel," where Rabbi Halevi says, in translation, "It is not plausible," after he talks about how much Rabbi Uziel loved all people, and certainly Jews, he writes, "It is not plausible that the heart which beat with pure love did not wield its influence on his general halachic thinking." Again, like Rav Zevin says, he says explicitly that Rav Uziel, as a posek, was definitely influenced in halacha by his great ava for human beings, and certainly his ava Yisrael. So there is apparently some kind of basis, at least, for ava, for rachmanus, for human feeling to influence a dayan. On the other hand, you have to be very careful how to define this and what this means. Rav Uziel himself has a tshuva in his Mishpatei Uziel and Ebenezer Ezer Siman Beis. He was asked a question by a rabbi in Morocco. It was a paternity case. So a woman had a relationship with a man and had a child, and she said that her lover was the father, and the lover hadn't denied that he was in a relationship with her. But he said, "No, I don't know. Maybe the father's somebody else, and it proved that I'm the father." So the Moroccan rabbi, told Rav Uziel, "We need to find some halachic basis to obligate the father, because if not, the kid will grow up feral, will grow up on the street without food, without civilization, without chinuch, and his life will be destroyed." So Rav Uziel launches into a magnificent tirade. He says, "This is not the way halacha works. Rachmanis does not play a role. We ikuf adin asahar, ein marachman badin." He goes on, lecturing Moroccan rabbi that the halacha must follow halachic principles, and Rachmanis cannot play a role. Then, actually, the next few pages, he goes on and actually does find a basis to be Mechayev the father. The details are beyond the scope of this lecture, but he actually is Mechayev. But the point is, he felt it necessary to go on for an entire page lecturing this rabbi that we do not paskin halacha based on feelings of Rachmanis, that it has to be. So with all Rav Uziel's love of Yisrael, he still felt it was very important to emphasize this, that we cannot simply be Mechayev people simply because we have Rachmanis on the children. Now, we can argue that the bottom line is going to have to be that Rachmanis can't be naked, can't be a standalone Rachmanis. It has to work within the halachic framework. And Rav Uziel apparently felt that this other rabbi had been calling for some kind of arbitrary Rachmanis, just to pass the din based on pure feelings without reference to the halacha. Perhaps Rav Uziel was willing to accept the idea that Rachamim could work as long as it was within a framework of halacha. Anyway, it's difficult to know exactly where to draw the line. We can also suggest, perhaps, that there's a difference between Rajan Lamachim and Rajan Lachavero, that when there's another party involved in Mishpat, where there's you want to be Mekil, fine, but you want to actually force somebody else to pay, how can we do that? On the other hand, some of Rav Uziel's examples, one of them was Mamzeret, which seems to be Rajan Lamachim. Anyway, the point is, even Rav Uziel, apparently, in many places, was willing to invoke Rachmanos and Avas Yisrael as a basis to pass the halacha here. At least he was very, very rigid about not doing this. Now, there are two Gemaras in Bava Metzia which are relevant to this discussion. First, in the second parak in Eilu Metzias, in the discussions of Ashoas Aveda, there is a halacha that after Yeish, in certain other cases, Aveda becomes Hefker, and need not be, or not Hefker, but need, not necessarily Hefker, but need not be returned to its owner. However, the Gemara says that that's Din. But Lefnim Yishuras HaDin, it should be returned to the owner. There's another Gemara, a very famous Gemara, a very famous and beloved Gemara. I think this is in the end of Omnim on Daf Pegimel Amud Aleph, the very last Gemara in Omnim. The Gemara says, Rabbi Bar Chana Tavru Lehanu Shkulai Chavita Dechamra. He had hired workers, porters, and they had destroyed a barrel of wine. Shakulugli Mayu. So he seized their cloaks, he seized their garments as payment for the damage. Asu Amru L'Rav. They complained to Rav. They said, look what happened, and now we're in trouble. Amarlei, Havlugli Mayu. He told him, return them their coats. In other words, don't charge them for the damage. Amarlei, Dina Achi. He was very surprised. He said, why? They damaged my barrel. They're at fault. Amarlei, in. Laman Telef with Derech Tovim. In other words, you're right. According to Halacha, normally they would be chayev, and you would be able to seize their property, but God wants us to be Holech with Derech Tovim. So Yav Legli Mayu, he followed the psak, he returned them the cloaks. Amrulei, Aniye Anan, Tarchinan Kulayama, Kafina, Vleslan Mizi. They said, fine, so we're not being charged for the barrel, but we are poor, we work the whole day, we are starving, we have nothing to eat, and he's not paying us for the work, so now we're going to go to bed hungry. Amrulei, the Dayan, Paskin, Zil, Havagrayu. Not only shouldn't you charge them for the loss of the barrel, pay them their wages. Amrulei, Dina Hachi, is that the Dina? I'm not going to charge them, but I should have to pay the wages. It's their fault. They broke the barrel. Why should I pay them? Amrulei, in. Varcha Tzadikim Tishmar. That's the end of the Pasuk. The beginning was Laman Telech Baderech Tovim. The end is Varcha Tzadikim Tishmar. You should follow the ways of Tzadikim. This Gemara also, the Pasuk can understand, is another injunction to follow the Mishura Tzadikim. Now, this Gemara seems to imply that the Dayan actually passed the Mishura Tzadikim. The first Gemara just says that there is an ethical injunction to follow the Mishura Tzadikim. This Gemara seems to indicate that the Dayan himself can actually rule this way in court and actually compel the litigant to follow this. This is actually a big machlokes to poskim. There are a number of poskim, that Ashkenazi poskim, the German Rishonim, and their followers, who said yes, that we are actually kofet to follow the Mishura Tzadikim, basically can compel a litigant, at least in certain cases, assuming he's not poor and assuming he has enough money, whatever the exact details are, but at least in some appropriate cases, he can force the litigant to follow the Mishura Tzadikim. This is the opinion of the Ravon, brought by the Shach and Chashan Mishpat and Simuration and Test, Sifkat and Gimel. This is also the opinion of the Bach and Simon Yud Beis and Chashan Mishpat, Sifkat and Dalet, who says that this is the Minog in all Batei Din. This is what we do, we file a kofin. There is a dissenting opinion. There were some Rishonim, the Beis Yosef and Simon Yud Beis, says there are Ben Yerucham and the Rosh disagree. There's a discussion about Achronim, who does agree, who does not agree. It is a big machlokes to poskim. There's a passage in Rav Sadia Gaon which seems to indicate that he may have felt that this is only an obligation of the litigant, not something which is enforceable and based in whatever it is. So it's a big machlokes to poskim, whether we paskin kofin or the Mishur Tzadin. And ones who say that we do, one of their sources is the Gemara that we read about the barrels, where the simple reading of the Gemara seems to be that the Dayan actually compelled the richer person to not only not charge the porters, but to even pay them their salary because they were hungry. Now, there's a tshuva from Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal in the Mishnah Sacher in Chinchas Mishpatim and Dalad. He quotes a number of Acharonim, the Shla, Rav Azariah Figo, and the Bina Leitim, the Gra, Rav Shlomo Kohen of Vilna, the Vilna Dayan. All of them say similar things. He says that the point of the Gemara in Homnim, the Gemara of the porters, is that even though we have a system of din, and din is for ordinary people, but people who are tzaddikim or chashuvim, a community perhaps, might have a higher standard. These people are held to a different standard, and for them, the din changes. This is din for them, and that's why it's enforceable in Beis Din, because even though for ordinary citizens, din is not machayev, let's say, if they broke the barrel, but for chashuva people or for a tzibur, din, that actually becomes a new system of din. And I once heard from Zalman Nechemia Goldberg in Eretz Yisrael, an idea like this. He said, he explained that the difference between din and Alfim Ashur HaDin is not necessarily in the level of obligation. As we saw, some poskim say Alfim Ashur HaDin is mandatory too and enforceable and based it. The difference is, he says, that din is the lowest common denominator, and din are broad-ranging legal principles that apply across the board, while Alfim Ashur HaDin is contingent, is what we sometimes call situational, that it depends who's rich, who's poor, what other kind of mitigating factors are there. Din, so Alfim Ashur HaDin means, aside from the regular, basic, broad-ranging din, in each case we have to consider the details of the case, and in some cases the dayan will decide that in this case we have you're also mechuyev, but even though it's not the regular rule, there's a different system which kicks in, called Alfim Ashur HaDin, which situationally we may be able to mechayev. There is a very interesting paper on this topic. You can find it on the internet. It's by a fellow named Michal Vigoda. He's a Mishpat Ivri scholar in Eretz Yisrael, big Talmud Chacham from what I've seen of his work. He has a very interesting paper on this topic of Alfim Ashur HaDin. He begins with two court cases from the Israeli secular court system. One case involved someone who had violated traffic laws. Another case involved someone who had evaded taxes. In both cases, there was supposed to be a fine assessed for breaking the law. And the defendant pleaded, he and his lawyers pleaded, that the court should consider the fact that he was poor and would have a hard time paying, and asked for a rahmanis. So the judges in these cases said, nope, says in the Torah, l'seder p'nei dol, v'dol l'seder b'rivo, that even if the law says that we have the right to adjust the fine based on mitigating circumstances, not the poverty of the litigant, because that would be a violation of the ancient Jewish principle of v'dol l'seder b'rivo. So Vigoda has a lengthy paper discussing many of the sources that we've given about Alfim Ashur HaDin, Kofin Alfim Ashur HaDin. Among other things, he quotes a fascinating letter from Rav Kook. He says he was shown this letter by Nachum Rakover, another famous Mishpat Ivri scholar. Rav Kook goes so far as to say that Rahmanis does play a role in din, even though the Torah says l'seder p'nei dol. He makes the distinction I mentioned before, that there's a difference between applying Rahmanis and ignoring the din, and applying Rahmanis within an overall framework of din. And he goes so far as to say that not just the legislators who make takanas have the right to take into account rahmanas, but even, he says, even dayanim, who are paskening in a court of law, can and should take into account rahmanas in deciding their psak. He writes, he says that the issue of dola sanda bariva was only bisman shadayin enam mischashev klal mshuras hadin. If he simply ignores the din and simply rules from his heart, that's the issue. But otherwise, he says, "Yesh reshus l'dayin l'pa'amim l'tarif l'zagami disarachim v'achem la'alom lalom v'behov v'behov d'manig d'hanit kar." He says the dayin has the right to incorporate rachmanus as long as he's working within an overall framework of the halacha. He has the right to incorporate rachmanus into his overall psak. And Dr. Vigoda also mentions two possible chilukim, two other guidelines in this area. He says, when you're dealing with another litigant, another private citizen, then rahmanis is inappropriate, because how can we be lenient on the first guy, which will mean being unfair to the second guy? However, in his cases where the plaintiff was the state, he says the state is not an ordinary private citizen, so perhaps it's easier to invoke rahmanis. Also, we suggest there's a difference between din Torah, the law that comes from the Torah, from Chazal, from Torah Shmuksav, first modern legislative law that the government makes up. He said, in the Torah's law is absolute MS, so we can't invoke Rachum because that would be a contradiction to Din. However, in modern law, and in tax law, and traffic law, he says that was made up by contemporary legislators. He says perhaps they have the right to say that we're designing the law, that Rachmana should be a factor in deciding how to apply the law. And he concludes his essay by saying that it's not so simple to simply say, Vidolo said Zeparivo. No, we see from all these sources that there are cases and there are situations in which Rachmanis does play a role in deciding the din. And Vigoda actually gets the last word, because I found on the internet there's a third case by a judge, Noam Solberg, who had also a case involving a criminal case against the litigant. And the litigant asked the litigant's lawyer for mercy. He had a hard childhood. He grew up in a rough environment. And the judge actually quotes Vigoda's paper and quotes the letter of Rav Kook and says, "You see that there is basis for invoking Rachmanis, and we don't have to take the simplistic attitude that Lo Sedebriva means that we can never take into account Rachmanis, and we always have to go according to the strict din." So we see from all this, getting back to the original Gemara, the Gemara says that we do not want a dayan who was too much of an oxnara, and not only that, but we want a dayan who has specific life experiences which will temper pure din. And as we've seen, there is basis for that, because even though we often apply a principle of Ein Merachim B'Din, we have seen many poskim in many different contexts who do indicate that there is some place for Rachmanis and din, and exactly when to apply it is obviously going to be tricky, as we've seen. Some people seem to say, Rav Kook says, that you have to have an overall framework of din and then to apply Rachamim, and obviously this is a very serious task to decide what that means. But the basic point we have seen is that Rachmanis does play a role in din.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.